Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. This is Talk Back. No guest, no in-depth investigative report, but lots of quality information on health, healing, also environmental updates and commentaries. I've written a commentary I'll share with you. Also, from our public health segment, a heart surgeon speaks out on what really causes heart disease, a Dr. Dwight Lundell. And this is very important. Rarely do we have a mainstream, highly respected physician talk about the truth. Also, is every day Black Friday? How climate inaction and hypermaterialism betray our children. Joe Rahm, Think Progress. We'll also be taking a look at exposing American doctors and psychologists and psychiatrists engaging in frightening torture programs since 9/11. Bill Berkowitz from Alternet. Also, the mass shootings that we've seen over the last 20 years. What makes our children and soldiers and others psychotic? From the editors of the Vaccine Liberation Army, there'll be an interesting take on that. Have you noticed that NPR has a very pro-fracking bias? They do. Well, we'll tell you why. An article on brought to you by Qatar and from FAIR. We have a lot to share. Let's begin. We always start our program with something on health and nutrition. We'll open it up to listeners at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And throughout the program, I'll be taking your calls. You can also listen over the telephone anytime you want to, anywhere in the United States or Canada. That number to call, 619-550-0869. 619-550-0869. Exercising during pregnancy improves vascular function of offspring into adulthood. This is from Science Daily, published in Experimental Journal of Experimental Physiology, and it says, quote, exercising during gestation has the potential to program vascular health into the offspring. The current guidelines for pregnant women recommend 30 minutes of moderate intensity physical activity on most, if not all, days of the week. Unfortunately, not all physicians are yet convinced that exercise is beneficial for both the pregnant woman and their offspring. Now, this study provides really good scientific evidence that maternal exercise during pregnancy is a powerful programming stimulus in the arteries of the offspring, and this programming may have implications for future cardiovascular disease susceptibility. This is all part of what we would call the epigenetics, meaning what your mother does while she's pregnant impacts the DNA in a very positive way in this case. So now women should be exercising. Being happy does lower your blood pressure. A new study shows that when you're happy and you're stimulating dopamine, that triggers feelings of joy and contentment. That lowers your blood pressure. And that means that we should be looking at therapies that that stimulate us on a subconscious level. Quote, while its release is induced, among other things, by the feel-good classics, sex, drugs, or food, the brain does not content itself with a kick. It remembers the state of happiness and keeps wanting to achieve it again. Dopamine enables us to make the right decisions in order to experience even more moments of happiness. Now, a team that's led by this Zurich professor from the Department of Biosystems Science and Engineering in Basel has discovered a way to use the body's dopamine system therapeutically. And it's all about visualization. Now, here's the takeaway message on this. We know that when people are engaged in pleasant, exciting, positive sex, that the dopamine level is very, very stimulated. Then the memory of that experience is locked into the cells. And, of course, the better it feels, the more likely are we to remember it, and it becomes almost a preoccupation. That's one thing. But also when we look at comedy and we laugh, or someone makes us laugh, we remember that because it also stimulates dopamine. So that's why Americans or people all over the world, they love humor. And then we know that food also stimulates this happiness. This is one of the reasons that when a person is otherwise feeling down, or maybe a little gray, depressed because of something in their life, their memory says, now when you were depressed, when you were 5 years old, you got some chocolate cake or ice cream. So it's on a subconscious level that we're being stimulated. Now, of course, for a whole lot of people, it's drugs or alcohol. Not that they become happy when they use them, but it alters their consciousness. And then they get to rely upon it, especially if it helps them get out of stressful situations, thinking about their problems, their sense of, I can't handle this, I can't cope. And that's why a lot of people smoke and drink and do drugs. Works in a negative way there, but it still works. That's why in order to get someone who's on drugs or on alcohol off, you have to have something else that takes the place of the drugs or alcohol, something that is a feel-good stimulator. And hence we should be looking for ways to feel good in a healthy way. And that's what this study shows. But it also lowers our blood pressure. That was the other side of the study. Now consider how many Americans have high blood pressure. Over 60 million. That's a lot of people. And someone either has a stroke or a heart attack every 20 seconds in the United States. So if we could be happier, if we could have better control over our happiness hormone, dopamine, our blood pressure would be lower, we'd have less chance of a heart attack or stroke, and we'd be feeling good. I think that pets help us there, because a pet, no matter what time you get home, no matter how late you are, they love seeing you. And their whole life is spent bonding with you. So that's a real good stimulator also. I'm always asked about what are some of the most important foods out there that we may not know about that could take us even to another level of internal health. Well, maca is one, M-A-C-A. Maca is a biennial plant from the Peruvian Andes in Bolivia. It's used as a root vegetable, but it's also very popular in their medical herbal use. They've used it for more than 2,000 years. In fact, it was actually a currency during the Inca Empire because it stimulates libido and it enhances energy. Well, what is the other plant, the other herb that does the same and was also more valuable than gold at one time? Ginseng. Now, there are different types of ginseng. In fact, one of the ways that I would help earn extra money in the summertime was harvesting ginseng. Wild ginseng is very expensive, and some of the most powerful ginseng in the world is found in West Virginia and Wisconsin. For some reason, we think that Chinese red ginseng is the best. It actually isn't. Your older ginseng is your more valuable ginseng. You get a 25-year root. Boy, that's worth, probably $500 to $1,000. And in any case, here we have the herb maca, and it does the same thing. It's an adaptogen, and it's famous for helping people who've had erectile dysfunction or loss of libido in men and women. And it's also promotes stamina. A lot of athletes use it, and it enhances fertility. Also, in some countries, they use it if they're constipated because it's very high in its laxative properties. It grows really high up, generally about 10 or 11,000 feet, so it's not like the average person is going to walk across it. And it's green, has fragrant tops, and it's something that we should be using more of in our society. There are particular chemicals called phenotypes, and these are part of what gives it its unique quality. And it can help reduce prostate enlargement. It has one of the most important ways of creating stamina. I believe that all athletes should use it as a powder. And in the last few years, you can generally get it in two colors, a kind of a bluish color and a green color. But they're all good. And so it's important. Stamina helps with PMS, reduces stress. It's been used for stomach cancer. It's immunostimulant. I would certainly use it if I were coming down with a cold or flu. So it's a superstar. It deserves the attention that it's getting. And it comes from the same countries that we get quinoa and some other wonderful legumes. And it was... I would also try to use it if I were having a problem with digestion. It's easy to digest. Now, something else that we should be using and we're not enough of in this society is kale. I make sure that I try to get kale in my juice every day. Now, kale is a form of wild cabbage. I'm sure you've all seen it has purple or green leaves. And it's a very common vegetable in Europe. It grows well into the late fall, and most of the time you lightly steam it and then stir it, do a stir-fried dish. And I like to do shiitake mushrooms with some shallots, pearl onions, and kale with olive oil and seasonings. Why should we eat more kale? Well, because kale is also in the cruciferous family. We know that the cruciferous vegetables help prevent cancer or help lessen the cancer if we have it. It's a very good source of vitamin K, A, and C. In fact, one single cup, which is about 64 grams of kale, has over 500 micrograms of vitamin K. And it has a lot of calcium, has 10,000 units of vitamin A in a single cup. So you're getting your carotenoids and you're getting antioxidants. It's good for your skin, your immune system, and your eyes. Kale is one of the anti-aging vegetables. Also, it's a good source of vitamin C. Not great, but it's... You get more vitamin C in a cup of kale than you get in a cup of orange juice or a cup of apple juice. Most people are not aware of that. Why would I want kale? Because, not because of its antioxidants, but because it's quite simply one of the best anti-inflammatory and detoxification plants that you can consume. It's high in sulfur and dietary fiber. Now, we know that sulfur is the third most abundant mineral in our body after calcium and phosphorus. And that aids in the production of bile acids and the regulation of blood sugar. Fiber, which it's rich in, is also able to help detoxify the waste that accumulates in our intestine. And so it's a great detoxifier. It's high in sulfur, which also kills viruses and bacteria. And most people are not aware of it, but it also contains the omega-3 fatty acids. For example, you get over 120 milligrams of the omega-3 fatty acids in one cup of kale. And that's anti-inflammatory. That turns off inflammation in your joints, your muscles, your heart, and your brain. And finally, it's a rich source of calcium and iron. In fact, per calorie, kale contains more iron than beef, and more calcium than milk. So for vegans, it's especially good. Helps prevent anemia. And it has some magnesium in there as well, and zinc. Now there's another nutrient that we're not getting enough of, and we should, because it reduces oxidative stress and enhances our immune system. And this is according to the peer-reviewed journal Nutrition and Metabolism. And there was a study at Washington State University School of Food Science. And what they found was that this nutrient, which is really good for our eyes, also called astaxanthin, A-S-T-A-X-A-N-T-H-I-N, is really good for helping you if you've exercised. And then traps those free radicals that are created by the exercise. Or let's say that you are stressed, and that creates free radicals. It helps trap those free radicals. Or let's say that you're being challenged by a virus or bacteria, and your immune system's taking a hit. It helps that. And let's say you have some inflammation somewhere in your body, in your joints, in your mouth, your gums. Well, it also helps turn off inflammation. It can even help stop the spread of cancer cells. So it's really a superstar. And it protects the skin, it protects the body from ultraviolet-induced oxidative stress. So make sure that you're getting it. You don't have to take a lot of it. Maybe, 10, 20 milligrams at a time would be fine for most people. And finally, from Health and Nutrition Today, milk thistle. Now, milk thistle has historically been used for people who have liver problems. Let's say cirrhosis of the liver, hepatitis B and C, non-fatty liver disease, or where you have a fatty liver disease, but it's not due to alcohol. Here's the latest on why we should be looking at milk thistle, a new study from the University of Colorado. And here's what it says, and also University of Maryland. It says, milk thistle, a proven cancer fighter and liver supporter. Quote from Elizabeth Renter. Milk thistle has been used for thousands of years as a medicinal plant. It is native to the Mediterranean region, but now can be found throughout the world. It's generally seen as beneficial for liver, kidney, and gallbladder issues, but research now shows it can do more. The active ingredient in milk thistle is an anti-inflammatory, an antioxidant, and also now anti-cancer. And it really benefits your liver. It helps. Keep in mind, you know what the liver does. The liver does many things, but it filters the blood and rids the body of harmful toxins. And especially if you consume alcohol, the liver can be really besieged. And you lose homeostasis. So milk thistle has been shown to have a dramatically positive effect on those people suffering from mild forms of liver disease. There were 5 separate scientific studies, and they showed milk thistle made a difference. So make sure you're getting your milk thistle if you have any kind of liver problems or cancer. I'm Gary Knoll, and this is our Talk Back segment. We'll be taking your calls throughout the program. And you have our number, 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. This is from our public health segment. This is unusual to hear this. This is from a Dr. Dwight Lundell, L-U-N-D-E-L-L. Here's what he says. We physicians, with all of our training and knowledge and authority, often acquire a rather large ego that tends to make it difficult to admit we are wrong. So here it is. I freely admit to being wrong. As a heart surgeon for 25 years, having performed over 5,000 open heart surgeries, today it is my day to right the wrong with medical and scientific fact. I trained for many years with other prominent physicians labeled opinion makers, bombarded with scientific literature, continually attending educational seminars. We opinion makers insisted heart disease resulted from the single fact of elevated blood cholesterol. The only accepted therapy was prescribing medications to lower cholesterol and a diet that severely restricted fat intake. The latter, of course, we insisted would lower cholesterol and heart disease. Deviations from these recommendations were considered heresy and could quite possibly result in malpractice. These recommendations are no longer scientifically or morally defensible. Let me repeat that. This is so rare for this to happen. These recommendations are no longer scientifically or morally defensible. The discovery a few years ago that inflammation in the arterial walls is the real cause of heart disease is slowly leading to a paradigm shift in how heart disease and other chronic ailments will be treated. The long-established dietary recommendations have created epidemics of obesity and diabetes, the consequences of which dwarf any historical plague in terms of death, human suffering, and dire economic consequences. Despite the fact that 25% of the population takes expensive statin medications, and despite the fact that we have reduced the fat content in our diets, more Americans will die this year of heart disease than ever before. Statistics from the American Heart Association show that 75 million Americans currently suffer from heart disease. I repeat, 75 million Americans currently suffer from heart disease. 20 million have diabetes. 57 million have prediabetes. These disorders are affecting younger and younger people in greater numbers every year. Simply stated, without inflammation being present in the body, there's no way that cholesterol would accumulate in the walls of the blood vessels and cause heart disease and strokes. Without inflammation, cholesterol would move freely through the body as nature intended. It is inflammation that causes cholesterol to become trapped. Inflammation is not complicated. It is quite simply your body's natural defense to a foreign invader, such as bacteria, toxin, or virus. The cycle of inflammation is perfect in how it protects your body from these bacterial and viral invaders. However, if we chronically expose the body to injury by toxins or foods the human body was never designed to process, a condition occurs called chronic inflammation. Chronic inflammation is just as harmful as acute inflammation is beneficial. What thoughtful person would willfully expose himself repeatedly to foods or other substances that are known to cause injury to the body? Well, smokers perhaps, but at least they made that choice willfully. The rest of us have simply followed the recommended mainstream diet that is low in fat and high in polyunsaturated fats and carbohydrates, not knowing we were causing repeated injury to our blood vessels. This repeated injury creates chronic inflammation, leading to heart disease, stroke, diabetes, and obesity. Let me repeat that. The injury and inflammation in our blood vessels is caused by the low-fat diet recommended for years by mainstream medicine. What are the biggest culprits of chronic inflammation? Quite simply, they are the overload of simple, highly processed carbohydrates like sugar, flour, and all other products made from them, and the excess consumption of the omega-6 vegetables like soybean, corn, and sunflower oils that are found in many processed foods. Now take a moment to visualize rubbing a stiff brush repeatedly over your soft skin until it becomes quite red and nearly bleeding. You kept this up several times a day, every day for 5 years. If you could tolerate this painful brushing, you would have a bleeding, swollen, infected area that becomes worse with each repeated injury. This is a good way to visualize the inflammatory process that could be going on in your body right now. Regardless of where the inflammatory process occurs, externally or internally, it is the same. I peered inside thousands upon thousands of arteries. A diseased artery looks as if someone took a brush and scrubbed repeatedly against its wall. Several times a day, every day, the food we eat creates small injuries, compounding into more injuries, causing the body to respond continuously and appropriately with inflammation. And while we savor the tantalizing taste of sweet rolls, our body responds alarmingly as if a foreign invader arrived declaring war. foods loaded with sugars and simple carbohydrates or processed with omega-6 oils for longer shelf life have been the mainstay of the American diet for 60 years. These foods have been slowly poisoning everyone. How does eating a simple sweet roll create a cascade of inflammation to make you sick? Well, imagine spilling syrup on your keyboard, and you have a visual of what occurs inside the cell. When we consume simple carbohydrates such as sugar, our blood sugar rises rapidly. In response, your pancreas secretes insulin, whose primary purpose is to drive sugar into each cell where it is stored for energy. If the cell is full and does not need glucose, it is rejected to avoid extra sugar gumming up the works. When your full cells reject the extra glucose, blood sugar rises, producing more insulin, and the glucose converts to stored fat. What does all this have to do with inflammation? Blood sugar is controlled in a very narrow range. Extra sugar molecules attached to a variety of proteins that in turn injure the blood vessel wall. This repeated injury to the blood vessel wall sets off inflammation. When you spike your blood sugar level several times a day, every day, it is exactly like taking sandpaper to the inside of your delicate blood vessels. And while you may not be able to see it, rest assured it is there. I saw it in over 5,000 surgical patients spanning 25 years who all shared one common denominator, inflammation in their arteries. Let's get back to the sweet roll. That innocent-looking goodie not only contains sugars, it is baked in one of many omega-6 oils, such as soybean oil. Chips and fries are soaked in soybean oil. Processed foods are manufactured with omega-6 for longer shelf life. And while omega-6s are essential, they are part of every cell membrane controlling what goes in and out of the cell. They must be in the correct balance with the omega-3s. If the balance shifts by consuming excessive omega-6, the cell membrane produces chemicals called cytokines that directly cause inflammation. Today's mainstream American diet has produced an extreme imbalance of these two fats. The ratio of imbalance ranges from 15 to 1 to as high as 30 to 1 in favor of the omega-6s. That's a tremendous amount of cytokines causing inflammation. Now, in today's food environment, a 3-to-1 ratio would be optimal and healthy. And to make matters worse, the excess weight you are carrying from eating these foods creates overloaded fat cells that pour out large quantities of pro-inflammatory chemicals that add to the injury caused by having high blood sugar. The process that began with the sweet roll turns into a vicious cycle. Over time, it creates heart disease and high blood pressure and diabetes and finally Alzheimer's disease as the inflammatory process continues unabated. There's no escaping the fact that the more we consume prepared and processed foods, the more we trip the inflammatory switch little by little each day. The human body cannot process, nor was it designed to consume foods packed with sugars and soaked with omega-6 fatty acids. There is but one answer to quieting inflammation, and that is to return to foods closer to their natural state, to build muscle, to have good quality protein, choose carbohydrates that are very complex, including colorful fruits and vegetables, and eliminate those inflammatory-causing omega-6 fats like corn and soybean oil and the processed foods that are made with them. Okay. Well, thank you, good doctor, for first having the humility to come forward and say you're sorry, made a mistake, and even though it's been 25 years of making mistakes, now you can really help the patients. We need more holistic cardiologists. We have very few. I understand Dr. Vanini has retired. So we really need some, a whole lot more. I'm Gary Nall. Let's say hello to Pauline from Queens. Hi, Pauline.
Hi, Gary. My question was, my niece just got pregnant, and I'm concerned because she had lupus a while back. So she probably, I don't think she ever detoxed. Is it too late now that she is pregnant to do any kind of a detox program? Because I don't want her child to come out with, I don't know what, like maybe ADHD. I don't really know what will happen.
How long has she been pregnant?
She's due in April, so that makes her, what, maybe a couple of months pregnant?
Okay, well, no. You can certainly do a modified cleansing program to get rid of the heavy metals.
Okay.
And you can do that gently by just increasing some of the juices and foods that naturally chelate, grab onto lead, mercury. And the more of the mercury and lead and cadmium and nickel that she gets out of the system, the healthier the neurodevelopment of the fetus will be. Even to have her mercury fillings, if she has any silver fillings, replaced. There are holistic dentists like Dr. Almayer Gadol and others that can take those out. Okay. That would be very important. She can also begin juicing, and there are juices that actually nourish her body, and everything that nourishes her body in a good way nourishes the developing fetus.
Obviously, before you ever get pregnant, that's best when you should detox, probably at least a year, right, before if you
I've always planning. Said the I've always said the following. Here's and I wrote a book on it. I should update the book. It was called How to Have a Healthy Pregnancy. I believe that before you have an intentional pregnancy, the both partners should spend 2 years detoxifying and rejuvenating. That's how long it takes to really cleanse the body, to rebalance its biochemistry.
So I should try to get you a book. Sounds like that's a good book to have right
well,
now.
It's out of print. That's
oh,
not in print.
Okay, well, I'll be looking.
And then to work upon all the issues emotionally, because here's what we now know. If whatever emotional issues that either person takes into the pregnancy actually impacts the vibration of the developing fetus, and it's called the epigenetics of pregnancy, and that's why you want to really resolve your emotional issues, your crisis, your conflicts, your traumas, your anger and negativity, depressions, anxieties. Those ideally should be resolved as a part of that whole detox program. So you go into your pregnancy happy, healthy, positive, and realizing the responsibility you have to give everything you can to this developing a fetus. So that's what I would suggest. Now, that's an ideal, but it's not too late to do that even during the pregnancy itself.
Okay, thank you so much.
All the best to you. Some thoughts. I'm sure many people in this audience are looking at all the buying and the selling that goes on this time of year, and you think to yourself, why? Why do people run into a store frequently pushing and arguing and just oozing with anger, all to buy something they probably didn't need, and certainly for most people couldn't afford, as if there was a shortage? I don't care whether it's Black Friday or any other day. The game is they make people believe that there is a limitation, and therefore come the night before, rush like stampeding elephants to get in. For what? These are smart retailers. They have unlimited amounts of inventory they can sell. So there's not a shortage. But it's a person's mindset in a world that values consumption. It was John Kenneth Galbraith, who I interviewed on this program, who said people of privilege will always risk their complete destruction rather than surrender any material part of their advantage. Now think of that for a moment. Think of the policymakers. Think of the most powerful, wealthy people in the world. People who don't need materially anything because they have everything. And yet you'd never know that because it seems like every day they're willing to risk everything just to have more. Then what are they really doing? What is behind all this need? And to understand them, we have to understand the average person. Black Friday, according to Joe Rahm, is a sort of a reverse Hunger Games. What's that mean? It means it's an annualized ritualizing of competition. but one built around overabundance, not scarcity. And it's perhaps the inevitable outcome of a country where so many citizens are commonly referred to as consumers. So what better time to think about how the global economic system is nothing more than a giant Ponzi scheme, an utterly unsustainable system that effectively takes wealth from our children and future generations, wealth in the form of our water, arable land, the fisheries, a livable climate. And what do they do with it? They think not of the future, but only how to use it today in a carbon-intensive lifestyle. Now, here's the irony. How many times have you seen that little clip of Bill Gates suggesting that, you know, we could offer some form of vaccination program that would be a way of stopping the fertilization of people in third world countries? And you keep hearing about how these people just keep having kids. Have you ever looked to see which group of people consume the most energy? It's the wealthy, educated people in the United States. 10 times, 1,000% more energy we consume than those in the third world. We cannot stop catastrophic climate change. I wish we could. Every time I interview someone, not just Professor McPherson, but all the other climatologists, they say it's too late. But this is not a message the mainstream media, the average person, wants to hear. We live in some state of denialism because we, as individuals, feel that we're powerless to reverse any of the problems. It would take a Marshall-style plan, and we have not the political or economic will to do that because the people who are in power are not going to allow it. So they'll give lip service to it. So we just deny it. But the reality is we have tipped, and it's going to get a lot worse. And the reason it's tipped is because we have an overconsumption-based economic system. We have already overshot the Earth's biocapacity, and the overshoot gets worse every year. The tragic irony is that much of this holiday shopping is supposedly for our kids, and yet this overconsumption is a core part of our climate inaction, which our president has clearly betrayed all future generations. But he and the people around him care not about future generations. All politicians and other sociopaths only care about the moment they're in. That's why I quoted John Kenneth Galbraith. Just imagine that you have so much money, you have so much power, you have so much political confidence based upon how you've used your resources, that you never think of slowing it down, bringing it back 2 or 3 notches instead of the mindset of growth, growth, growth. Pull back and say, recover, replenish, plant 100 million trees in every state. De-ghettoize cities. Build wells for those people who have no water. Build sanitation. Build living communities. But people won't do that. The end to hyper-consumerism cannot be relegated by amending legislation. How many times have you heard on this program where I've talked about when the reality that we are destroying a livable climate becomes so palpable, and it's so obvious to anyone who looks at the evidence, and yet the vast majority of the media, outside of reporting on extreme weather events without any irony to them, just yesterday in Montana, they had one of the coldest 24-hour periods in history of the state. 20,000 cattle froze to death yesterday. Thousands of horses froze to death. They just got hit with this massive cold and snow, and they couldn't rescue any of them. So even when we have it happening right in front of us, we become anesthetized to it. The average American is responsible for destroying a livable climate. So what do they do? Well, they stay in denial, much like Bill Clinton did. He only became a vegan after he experienced 2 heart attacks. A recent must-read New York Times opinion piece by an Iraq war veteran entitled Learning How to Die in the Anthropocene explains that quantum shift in mindset is inevitable. Quote, the human psyche naturally rebels against the idea of its end. Likewise, civilizations have throughout history marched blindly towards disaster because humans are wired to believe that tomorrow will be much like today. It is unnatural for us to think that this way of life, this present moment, this order of things is not stable and permanent. Across the world today, our actions testify to our belief that we can go on like this forever, burning oil, poisoning the seas, killing off species, pumping carbon into the air, ignoring the ominous silence of our coal mine canaries in favor of the unending robotic tweets of our new digital imaginarium. And yet the reality of global climate change is going to keep intruding on our fantasies of perpetual growth, permanent innovation, and endless energy, just as the reality of mortality shocks our casual faith in permanence. The biggest problem climate change poses is how the Department of Defense should plan for resource wars, or how we should put up seawalls to protect Alphabet City, or when we should evacuate Hoboken. It won't be addressed by buying a Prius, signing a treaty, or turning off the air conditioning. The biggest problem we face is a philosophical one, understanding this civilization is already dead. The sooner we confront this problem, and the sooner we realize there's nothing we can do to save ourselves, the sooner we can get down to the hard work of adapting with mortal humility to our new reality. The choice is a clear one. We can continue acting as if tomorrow will be just like yesterday, growing less and less prepared for each new disaster as it comes, and more desperately investing in a life we cannot sustain. Or we can learn to see each day as the death of what came before, freeing ourselves to deal with whatever problems the present offers without attachment of fear. End quote. And so every generation comes after the baby boomers is poised to experience the dramatic changes in lifestyle that inevitably follow the collapse of any Ponzi scheme. In our case, investors, the current generation, are paying themselves by taking the non-renewable resources and livable climate from future generations to perpetuate the high returns the rich countries in particular have been achieving in recent decades. We have been taking an ever greater fraction of non-renewable energy resources, especially hydrocarbons and natural capital such as fresh water and arable land and forests and fisheries, and the most important non-renewable natural capital of all, the livable climate. And so we find ourselves at that point. Do we wake up? Do we listen to the opinion makers? Do we stop participating in their game? That choice is yet to be determined. I'm Gary Nall, and let's say hello right now to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Now, I found a quote today online. It says, when a well-packaged web of lies has been sold gradually to the masses over generations, the truth will seem utterly preposterous and its speaker a raving lunatic. That was said by Dresden James, and it rings so true with what you're talking about tonight. I have a couple of emails here. One is from Sharon from Boston, Massachusetts, and she says, my dad is an economist, and yet he missed the 2000.com bubble and the 2007 subprime bubble. And she said, I heard you discussing with Luann why companies work their money offshore. And she says, can you give me an idiot-proof short summary of what's wrong with the neoliberal globalist policies which my dad supports?
Well, All right. We have to look at this from two perspectives. One is from those who have all the power. And that's a relatively small group of corporations, about 147 corporations interlocking with over 6,000 additional foundations, think tanks, and other corporations. And this group of people control about 40% of the total wealth in the world. And they certainly control most of the globalization efforts. You have to look at the problem in pieces, as if each piece were a piece of the puzzle. First, you have $33 trillion in profits made by American corporations sitting in Jersey, which is the little island off Great Britain, because it's a tax haven, meaning there's no corporate taxes paid, or Guernsey, another of these, or the Cayman Islands. There are over 60 different countries that have massive amounts of deposits. But in point of fact, the money actually isn't there. If you went to any of these banks, you know, you wouldn't find, for instance, Jersey is supposed to have $500 billion in accounts. And you won't know who those accounts belong to. You won't know who the real owners of that money are, in most cases, because of their privacy. And what happens is this. Instead of doing the rational thinking, having one single flat corporate tax, something very reasonable, so we bring the tax structure down, make it 20%. But you could not have any deductions. You couldn't get your money offshore. Whatever you made here or anywhere else in the world, you paid 20% on. That would increase our tax revenues by over $1.3 trillion a year. Right now, General Motors or General Electric, $6 billion in profits, didn't pay any taxes. And Google and others don't pay any taxes, federal taxes. And then, of course, you have a good sales tax at the state level and in the local city level to support local government. But also, at some point, if we really want to be fair, we have to bring all bureaucracies down to the size where they're functional, give them the power to exercise restraints and have the proper protections for the consumer, and then stop privatizing that which is held in common. Right now, those who have the most control benefit by having unlimited amounts of debt, meaning the Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan Chase and Credit Suisse and all the other major banks, they can go into a country. And let's say they go into a country that's rich in natural resources, oil, gas, diamonds, forest. And they, through the World Bank, they structure a deal. And they give $2 or $3 billion loan. Well, that money never goes to the country, though the people at the head of that government will certainly get some of that. And then when they are stressed paying it back, then in comes some economic hitmen. And these economic hitmen offer them a way out. You can't take care of this debt, then you have a lot of industry here. Privatize it. Let people we know come in and give you a good amount of money for it. So right now, the water is free. All right, let them buy the water rights. Let them buy, for example, in Austria, the Austrian government years ago sold off all of its transit system to an American corporation. And none of these privatization deals are ever really good for the people. Now, things held in common, like our parks and our rivers, our lakes, our streams, the police department, the fire department, the Coast Guard, the civil defense, our schools, public schools, these should all be in hospitals. These should be something that are there, that we all benefit from, that should never be privatized. And yet they're privatizing them in every country in the world, including even affluent countries, including even the parking meters were all privatized in Chicago. Now, it doesn't mean that they are better than what it would have been had the government done it. It just means the government gets a one-time payment up front, and then that's it. They spend the money, and now someone else has got their best land or can do what they want with almost any of the resources in the country. These people make money. The most powerful people make money. When, for example, they can create enormous amounts of debt. They can borrow any amount they want, hundreds of billions, even trillions of dollars. Citibank and Bank of America both borrowed, between the two, over $2.5 trillion, trillion, at zero interest. They can manipulate governments. They're more powerful than governments. And then they can privatize the resources, or they can take corporations in the United States, buy them, load them with debt, take off their best assets, sell those, and then offshore the whole operation to a third world country that's willing to use exploited cheap labor, bring that product back into the United States, which they can now do because of the World Trade Organization, where there's no protected barriers, and where now a bicycle that used to be made in the United States and would supply money that would circulate about 60 times around a community, now the bike is made in China and is actually retailed less than what it used to be wholesaled when it was made in the United States. Well, how can you compete when it costs you $55 to build a bike, and yet you buy it from China and you can sell it for $55? You can't compete. And so that's where they made their money. They have caused over 60,000 factories to close. They have caused over 28 million Americans over the last 35 years to lose their jobs. And now they're doing this throughout the entire world. And they sponsor politicians. They sponsor think tanks. They sponsor foundations. They own the control the media. They have talking heads on both MSNBC and Fox. And it's one against the other. And the real issues are almost never discussed. They'll buy land. They'll buy land in Ethiopia and in the Sudan, land that is needed by the native populations, not because they intend to grow and sell, but because they intend to control the prices. They'll buy commodities without wanting to actually own a barrel of oil, but they want the right to manipulate the price of oil up so that they can then control it. So that's what we have right now. Now, these people are clueless. These major multinational people are absolutely clueless about the consequences. For example, more than 25 half of all counties in the United States are experiencing drought. And 62% of the continental U.S. suffers from drought conditions. 24% face extreme and exceptional drought. And yet, people are still moving into areas where they're not going to have water. And farmers are still trying to raise corn, soybeans, and other food staples where the prices are going to go through the roof, causing increased misery and hardship for farmers and low-income Americans and poor people in other countries that rely upon imported grains. And then you look around and you start seeing temperature variations everywhere. And yet these people will control industries that pollute nonstop. Now, could they afford to stop that? Yes, they could. But it would mean that for a period of time, their profits would be little less. There was a time when you took into account the money that you gave your workers for a living wage and health care and maternity leave, and also your support of the local culture, the libraries and the parks and the ball games and all the things you did because it was part of this moral and ethical responsibility. All that's gone. These major players care not about the consequences of what they manufacture, of what they produce, of how it impacts other people. So they're the ones who are really about commodifying everything. They believe that everything is of value if it can be controlled and priced. And that takes into account what is really peak civilization. You've heard of peak water and peak oil. We've passed peak oil a long time ago. All you have to do is read the history of the work of M.K. Hubert back in 1956. He was a geophysicist and oil expert. He predicted that the production and consumption of conventional oil in 49 contiguous states at that time would follow a curve by the early 70s. And he was right. You had abandoned fields all over Oklahoma and Texas because they had reached peak oil. They were out of oil. Now, we never run completely out of oil. At some point, we have far less oil and therefore cost a whole lot more. Well, only those who are very wealthy will be able to buy the products or engage in spending where an airplane ticket costs twice as much because the cost of gasoline has gone up. The average person suffers. We are also experiencing, going to experience within the next 7 years, peak gas. And we've already experienced peak water. And now we're running out of peak land. The only thing we will have plenty of is peak, we will not have peak coal. At the current level of using coal, we have enough for 1,000 years. But these people don't care about renewables. They don't care about organic soil. They don't care about conservation. They care about maximizing their profits. And if it costs us environment, if it costs us human health, if it costs disease, if it costs deforestation, acidification of the ocean, if it costs pollution of the great rivers, that's irrelevant to them because they'll never have to bathe in the Ganges. They'll never have to suffer from nutrient deficiencies because they will be living in gated, exclusive communities, utopian, dystopian futures. But for everyone else, there's going to be a big hurt coming. And unfortunately, economics is not a science. It's as close as you can get to a form of alchemy. And just look at all the people who thought they were right, and they weren't. So all the people who said, oh, aren't we great? No, we're not. We have driven bubbles. Right now, we are living in a pure bubble. Commercial real estate, it's a bubble. Credit cards, a bubble. The student loans, a bubble. A privatization of everything, it's a bubble. Well, what happens when the bubble bursts and we have to face reality? Well, then you're going to have 270 million Americans who are broke, and the only way they can buy anything, including food, is if they put it on a credit card, which means they're living through debt. Well, how can you say you're a prosperous nation when 80% of all the people, or 85% of the people, are living in debt? And those that created the debt are never, they profit from the debt because they can amass debt, which allows them then to buy assets and spend that money to control the price of currencies, politicians, laws, regulations. They can do it all. They are the ultimate corrupt people. Hope that answers the question.
Thank you very much, Gary.
I'm Gary Nall. We're up at the end of our program. I want to thank you all for listening. And by the way, I want to thank the people who sent us those old dancing videos from all of those parties we had. We had about 50 parties. We've gotten about 22 films. About half couldn't be put up because it's too dark. These were just private little home movies people were making inside the dance clubs. But there are about 7,000 people's faces you can see laughing, dancing, having a great time. So go up on Gary Nall YouTube or Gary Nall's Facebook, and see if you can find yourself if you came in any of those parties in the 1980s, 90s, and up through about 2008, I think, or 2010 we did the last one. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.